Radiotopia.
You didn't hear this from me, but Normal Gossip is back for a sixth season. Join host Kelsey McKinney as she shares the juiciest gossip from the real world. Each episode, she's joined by a special guest, and you might recognize a couple this season from the Radiotopia universe. Normal Gossip, named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture, is out now on all your favorite podcast platforms. New episodes starting April 17th.
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
Go get them.
Get who?
The bad guys.
This is Henry. He's 4.
Here's the bad guys.
He's also my son.
Is that a good guy or a bad guy?
And lately, he's been obsessed with a game he made up.
What's the game that you play? What is it called again?
Bad guy, good guy. We go and huddle to see who wants to be the bad guy and who wants to be the good guy.
The rules of bad guy, good guy are complicated.
So we get some guns, and he gets a stick, and he fights us.
And then how do you guys have guns?
We build it with Brussels blocks.
With what?
Brussels blocks.
Brussels blocks?
Yeah, so we get a little thing right here, and then we cover this right here, and then we shoot.
We played the same games that every other kids play, you know, cops and robbers, cowboys and Indians.
This is Joe Jackalone, a retired New York cop. Despite the age difference and the fact he spent decades going toe-to-toe with real-life bad guys, Officer Joe can relate to Henry.
I was the youngest, so I always got stuck being the bad guy. So my brother was always the good guy, right? He would come in and have to save the day, and I'd be the one that get beat up at the end.
He took some hits, but Joe loved playing the bad guy.
Well, I guess the fun part about being a bad guy is that, you know, you would do things that you normally wouldn't do or say, right? So maybe if you were a bad guy as a kid, you say a curse word and you wouldn't have said normally. So it's all play acting. And I guess if your mother heard you, instead of getting smacked, you could just say, well, I was the bad guy. That's how bad guys talk. I probably still would have gotten smacked.
Unfortunately, my son is just starting to realize this.
Which bad guy do you like to be the most?
I think the stormtroopers.
What's so cool about the stormtroopers to you?
Because they have guns and they can shoot and they die. That's why the stormtroopers die, but I hate to die, but...
What do you mean you like to die? How do you die?
We die and we close our eyes and we don't move and we fall on the ground. That's how we die.
And how long do you die for?
Like 1 minute or 10 minutes or something, like 1 minute.
What do you do after
that? And then you come back, and then I try to shoot them, and then we don't die again.
You got that? Did you follow that? It turns out there's an inherent moral code happening in this game. If the bad guys die, then the bad guys lose. If they lose, something bigger happens.
Why do you like to be the good guy sometimes?
Because then I will win.
The good guys always win?
Yeah.
From PRX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil. Today on the show, Kid Detectives. Why we love to solve mysteries, hunt for clues, and save the world all before bedtime. It's the second installment of our two-part series on kids and crime.
Because this time, justice gets juvenile.
There are a lot of reasons why people decide to go into law enforcement. A sense of justice, a love of community, or a love of David Caruso taking off his sunglasses in order to say stuff like,
"So our accident is not an accident at all."
I tell the kids all the time, it's nothing bad to say that, you know, you've been influenced by television shows. Television shows were big back in the day. So I was growing up watching Emergency or Chips or those kind of things. And I think they might have some influence into what my decision-making was. Just like kids today, I mean, most of them are in criminal justice programs because of CSI Miami and shows like that.
The influence of fictional detectives even extends to the schoolyard, which is exactly where Candace Watson attempted to hone her investigative skills. And what better mystery to solve than that of the opposite sex?
Okay, so when I was in fourth grade, there were two things that I really, really loved, and they were TV and detective books with, like, girl-solving mysteries like Nancy Drew or the Babysitter's Club members or Harriet the Spy. So I wanted to be a famous writer and a spy and a detective, so I started keeping a journal so that I could keep track of case files and everything like that. And it went okay, except there I still just couldn't figure out one of the mysteries of life, and that is why boys are so damn weird. October 4th, 1995. This notebook is a replacement for my real diary. I'll record my secret detective files in here. When I grow up, I'm going to write a series called The Junior Detective Babysitting Club. I'm going to send it to the Scholastic Publishing Company and see if they'll publish it. I guess I'll be famous. I wonder who likes me. A secret admirer would be nice. In fact, I hope that I have a secret admirer. That would be my first mystery. Is this person my own age or older? Is this person shy and afraid to tell me? I hope that he puts presents in my locker, like chocolate, flowers, or rollerblades. Even a note would be tantalizing. That's a word that I learned that means very good. October 7th. Yesterday, I noticed a boy who's in the other fourth grade named Sean who looks as though he's taken growing pills. Last year, he kissed my best friend Katie on the playground. I hope they don't start dating. October 13th. My worst nightmare has come true. Katie and Sean kissed on the lips. Does this mean they're in love? After romance comes a summer romance. And then a wedding. This is a catastrophe. Why does this have to happen to me? October 19th. I'm at the state fair with Katie and Sean. Hopefully I'll find a mystery or a case to crack. I think that Sean looks very suspicious. I bet he's a criminal because he's acting so suspicious. I bet that Sean's friends are an international band of fourth grade criminals. If I catch him, I guess I'll be famous. I think that I may have a real case on my hands. I'll call it the case of the mystery boy. Signed, Candace Watson, Private Eye. So I had my case and notes in the back of the notebook, and this is the evidence that I had against Sean. Number one, doesn't ever want to be in pictures. Two, tries to act normal. Three, talks with his friends in a huddle. Four, doesn't want to be around me. Five, never opens the zipper part of his backpack. December 1st, I was looking at Kenny C through my binoculars at recess and he gave me... and he gave me this really weird look like I was crazy or something. January 7th, of the first 6 days of 1996, January 5th was the best. One of my New Year's resolutions was to tell Katie more of my secrets. I told her that I liked Kenny. Then she called Kenny over to the balance beams where we were standing. I was so scared. She told Kenny, Candace likes you, but is more than a friend. And I couldn't believe what he said. Kenny said that he liked me. And he said that I was nice. Never in my 10 years on this planet. Have I heard a boy say that about me? I have not thought about JTT since then. I decided that when I write my autobiography, I'm gonna write about now, fourth grade, the best time of my life so far. I'm going to call it The Top Secret World of Candace Watson. I guess I'll be famous.
Few girls have ever solved the mystery of how boys think. But the reason might have less to do with the fact that the case is unbreakable, and more to do with the fact that few kids have the patience to wait it out. After all, investigations are tedious work.
Stakeouts are not like what you see on television. They're long, they're boring, and they don't have the ability to eat, drink, or go to the bathroom. You bring a brown bag to lunch, and you have a cup that you have to urinate in. So you just sit there all day. You bring a cooler, and you sit and wait.
Kids are no stranger to boredom, and it's that exact kind of monotony that inspired our next kid detective, Allison.
When you're in the middle of the woods, where your house is, with no cable or satellite, you can only read so many books before you just get antsy. You have to go outside. I was homeschooled from first grade on, so I did have a lot of time to fill. Those hours can feel really long when you're a kid. I remember a few times looking at our clock in our living room. We had a big giant clock and going, oh, it's only 2 o'clock in the afternoon. This day is never going to end.
Luckily, Allison had a cure for the boredom, a very exclusive club.
I would say forming my detective club was the most awesome way to pass time I've ever come up with.
Samantha and I were the main detective duo. We investigated people a lot. And by investigated people, I mean we spied on people. I remember so many instances like that. The case of the footprints in the snow, or the case of who left crumbs on the kitchen counter, or the case of who stole a cookie from the cookie jar, things like that, that we would go, this is a mystery that needs to be solved in our mystery-solving club. We did investigate one time the case of the spilled nail polish in Walmart. And there was a giant spill of nail polish on the nail polish aisle. And Mika and Samantha said, we've got to solve the mystery of who spilled the nail polish. And so I said, okay. And then walking through Walmart, everything was a clue. You know, a random plastic fake flower in the floral department, that's a clue. Put it in your backpack, Allison. This packet of M&Ms by the cash register, that's definitely a clue. So there were so many little items. I think there was another little bottle of nail polish that they said was a clue, and they kept putting them in my backpack. So finally my mom caught on to what was happening, and she said, what are you guys doing? What's in your backpack, Allison? And I said, nothing, obviously. And she looked, and of course she found all of the items that we were shoplifting, but we didn't think of it as shoplifting. We're trying to solve a mystery. So she made us put everything back, and she did not take us out for ice cream like she said she was going to, because we got in trouble. And you know what the worst part was? We never solved the case of who spilled the nail polish.
Which brings us to today. Back to the scene of the crime, or a scene of a crime. It's a gloomy afternoon, and Allison is standing outside a large store, the kind of store where nail polish sometimes magically disappears. And we wondered if Allison still had a knack for making ordinary days more entertaining by finding fun clues.
We're now behind a Ralph's Foods, I believe, and we're going to investigate the case of the abandoned Tupperware, a mystery I found, very similar to a mystery that I would find and try and solve as a kid detective.
Moments later, Allison points at the Tupperware behind the supermarket and has an epiphany. And you know those moments where Sherlock Holmes removes a pipe from his mouth to say something profound? Well, it's kinda like that. Only in Allison's case, that revelation is,
it has something in it. It's either poop or an avocado. It's a little difficult to judge at this distance. So I'm gonna have to get closer, and I'm gonna have to open up this container. I'll tell you more. Well, surprise, surprise, it's neither. It's actually a chocolate cupcake. I think it was probably a s'mores-flavored cupcake because there appear to be mini marshmallows in here that are kind of melty and sad-looking. It still smells delicious.
So, yeah, after decades of sleuthing, she still got the touch, along with this helpful tip for future generations of kid detectives.
If you want to know what's in something, just open it up and look. It's either poop or an avocado, or you might get lucky and it's a chocolate cupcake. You'll never know until you find out. And you'll only find out if you're willing to investigate.
Thanks to Hedley Dion for bringing us that story. Now, of all the reasons kids fantasize about doing detective work, the biggest reason is the one that makes us cheer at the end of every action film. We simply want to see that justice is served.
I was absolutely obsessed with Knight Rider. A-Team, Encyclopedia Brown. What I loved was that they were all outsiders, all trying to enact justice, and they all were vigilantes.
As a kid growing up in Michigan, Mike Stern always fantasized about saving the day, and that's because...
In elementary and middle school, I was the farthest thing from being cool or accepted. I was quite the outcast. Kids would draw caricatures of me with my giant nose and my ears sticking out and my glasses. One kid in the class would start drawing the picture and then would pass it to the kid behind him to a point where all 20 kids in the entire classroom got a piece of this horrific Stephen King-esque caricature of me. I mean, I had girls beat me up. My last name's Stern. I would be called Mike Sperm sometimes once I was stuffed into a locker. I remember him laughing and he said, "I'll see you next period," after he slammed the door. And I was banging and banging and banging on the door. It took a long time before a janitor walking the halls found me and then was able to get the door open. Getting constantly made fun of and beat up developed a sense of right and wrong in me, and it kind of gave me a little bit of an obsession about seeing justice served in the world.
So Mike set out to take matters into his own hands.
I had these fantasies I was going to take karate classes, become some sort of vigilante like Batman, and then, you know, take over, you know, the whole city and make everything right. But the first fight that I got into with my martial skills of karate, the kid pushed me, and I then dropped into some Ralph Macchio type stance, ready to jump kick him, and then did this elaborate kick, which he then grabbed my leg and then punched me in the balls. And I was then on the ground writhing in pain. Never became Batman.
Not one to give up, Mike decided if he couldn't fight back in real life, he'd turn to a more creative outlet.
I'm going to read for you some detective novels that I wrote as a 7-year-old kid. This was back in 1982. These stories starred me and a couple of the cool kids that I went to school with. Now, granted, these two kids, one was named Micah and one was named John, they wouldn't give me the time of day in real life. But in my detective stories, they were the Watsons to my Sherlock Holmes. And in the stories, we called ourselves the Red T-Birds. And just to clarify how lame the T-Birds were, I spelled it T-E-A. First up is The Clue of $3,000 by Mike Stern. At school, Micah was talking to Amy. "My dad's best friend was poor, and then all of a sudden, he had $3,000. "That's queer," said Micah. "That's right," said Amy. "I gotta tell Mike about this," Micah said. "Mike," yelled Micah, "come here." Mike ran off the playground. "Some guy was poor, and then in one day, he was rich." "Oh no," Mike said. "That sounds like another case." "Let's look for clues." But at the man's house that was poor and became rich, there were two dogs at the door, and they would not let them in. But on the sidewalk was $1. "What's this?" said Mike. "I think we better get John." "I think so," said Micah. "Me too," said a voice. "Who said that?" said Micah. "Me," said a voice. Then Mike looked behind him, and there was John. "Well, we're all here," said Mike. "Looks like another case for the Red T-Birds. The clue of $3,000. And it's missing." "Hey, that's the guy that stole the money," Mike said, pointing to a guy in the backyard. "He's getting away," yelled John. "Get him," Mike said.
Mike, Micah, and John ran after the guy, and Mike grabbed him. How come you stole that money? I didn't have that much money, the guy said. So, Mike said, you could ask a bank. I didn't know that, the man said. And Mike thought, maybe if you give the money back, then maybe the bank will just give you some money. Thank you, kids, said the man with a smile, and that's just what he did.
I continued writing after middle school, well into high school. I wound up writing sketches for this show that we did at the end of the year, and this was junior, senior year in high school, and we did a rehearsal of it for the first time. And after the rehearsal, one of the actors came up to me, and this was a guy who used to beat me up back in middle school, and was like, hey, Mike, can you put me in this sketch? Please, 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 just, I'll stand in a corner, just please put me in this thing. And there was a part of me that wanted to tell him off. I was writing stories all these years to escape these people, and it was really an interesting turnaround to have somebody begging me to be in one of my stories. But my better angel won me over, and I gave him one of the main roles in the sketch, and he did a pretty good job. And the night of the show, I remember peeking up behind the curtain and seeing just hundreds of faces, people who had beaten me up and been bullies in the past, and they're all laughing, you know, just bawling. That was a moment I'll never forget.
Further proof that justice is a dish best served by kids with overactive imaginations. And before we close the case on kid crime solvers, we realize there's a whole new generation of boy and girl detectives. And what better way to pass the baton than give them their very own series? Action, intrigue, latchkey programs. Coming soon to Radiotopia, Kid Crime Squad. The world's first crime podcast with an all-kid cast. Justice has a new name. Henry.
Go get them.
Zoe.
I love you too, Mom.
Jackson.
And if you don't listen to your mom, bad things will happen.
Jackson's brother Cole, who could care less about what day of the week it is.
That's a chipmunk, not a squirrel.
And their mystical mentor, Joe Jackalone.
Look at the cops. They're at the crime scene. The guy's dead, and they're all sitting around laughing.
When trouble comes calling, they call back. And hang up, because secretly, we're all a little afraid inside. And this concludes today's look at Kid Detectives, where we learned...
If you want to know what's in something, just open it up and look. It's either poop or an avocado, or you might get lucky and it's a chocolate cupcake.
All the childhood writings heard in today's episode are the real deal. No embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness. To share the shame, follow us on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. Or visit GetMortified.com to learn about Mortified stage shows, books, films, and beyond. Click participate, and you know what? You could appear on a future episode of this series. As many of you know, the Mortified podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, which is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp. Thanks to AdZerk for providing their ad-serving platform to Radiotopia, and to support our podcast, email sponsor at radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Katie McMurrin, Pooja Bhatt, Hadley Dion, Shelby L. Altmani, Maddie Cohen, Dave Nadelberg, and myself, Neil Katcher. Today's episode featured stories and interviews with Mike Stern, Candace Watson, Allison Powell, Big Henry Katcher, and Joe Jackalone. Like him on Facebook by searching Joseph L. Jackalone. That's G-I-A-C-A-L-O-N-E. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snake, Snake, Snakes. Mike Grotman produced some of this material for the stage. Thanks to Lance Roberts Studios, Shay DeGrannis, and all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and you have the right to remain silent.